strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. There's a debate about how many people are actually paying attention to the election audit that we have going on. And the debate is, how many? Well, I think the people that are concerned that are very intent and concerned. But is this a huge following? There's a big difference. You understand that. You know, there's a difference between a Garth Brooks concert and a Grateful Dead concert. Now, the Grateful Dead had a great following. They followed them all over the world. And they had a very dedicated but much smaller following in later years. Whereas Garth Brooks, everybody wants to see Garth at least once. So we're kind of making that comparison. And I will tell you, I think that's kind of the way it is. The people that are interested are very, very interested, but it doesn't have mass appeal to people. It's important, which is why we talk a lot about it. And this is something I think even has a smaller audience, but it still has implications that are very important, especially with an election that's coming up in a year and a half. The Arizona Republican Party had a vote on January 23rd to elect party officials. For those of you that don't kind of understand that there's a difference between a Republican voter and the Republican Party. Party officials are elected or appointed, and they are, you've got to be a member of the party to be, have a vote in the party election. So a Republican voter doesn't have a vote in leadership. You have to be a part of the party. And the same thing with the Democratic Party. And they had an election on January 23rd. There were some irregularities. They made an announcement of a wrong person winning an office. So there's been a push to redo it or to fix it or to look into it and check the ballots. And the party refused. Now, I thought this was a big mistake because the party is the one that's pushing the audit that you see down at the Coliseum. And they will tell you that it's much different. But in principle, it's exactly the same. When you have someone that comes on the air and goes on television and says, the reason why we're doing some of what we're doing is because a guy somewhere said some things. That was an accurate quote, I believe, from the person that said it. That's why they're doing some of the things they are. We are myth busting. So why should we not look for bamboo in the ballots? That's what we've heard. Not that there's hard evidence out there that something may be wrong and it bears further look. It's, we heard a rumor, and why not just do this to make sure everybody's satisfied? We've heard this on a number of occasions about this, and this is being promoted by the Arizona Republican Party. They refused to let anybody look at the ballots. They refused anybody let anybody look at the machines. They refused. It ended up going to court, and a superior court judge, and his name is Michael Kemp, said basically, it's not my job. We have no standing here. We have no reason to be here, which means this is a private election. It's not a public election, and it's none of our business. We cannot adjudicate this case, that this is something that's got to be settled within your ranks. And so that they kind of put an end to it. The courts are not going to compel the Republican Party to allow much. Now, I will say that the Republican Party had conceded on certain things. You can look at certain things. The problem I have with this is the appearance of it. And it's that the Arizona Republican Party itself is a big part of fundraising for the audit. The reason for the audit was what everybody else did wasn't good enough. And now the reason for the black lights looking for watermarks and the reason for looking with very high resolution cameras for bamboo in the ballots, or however they're looking for bamboo in the ballots, is because of rumors that people have heard. I want to know how many of you before you listen here or heard someone else talking about it, heard that there were 40,000 ballots flown in from China to Maricopa County. I hadn't even heard that rumor until we heard they were looking for bamboo in the ballots. So if you're going to say, as a principle of looking at this in an audit, that the rumor is out there, doesn't matter how many people believe it, doesn't matter how plausible it is, it doesn't matter how much evidence you have of it possibly happening. Just because it's out there, what's the problem with looking just to make sure? And that's basically what we've heard. If that's the standard, then why didn't they just turn over the ballots and let everybody have another look at how it was done on January 23rd? Do we understand the double standard that it appears that's happening here? overall, I will tell you, you know, it's the same thing they talk about, you know, sausage. Sausage is always better enjoyed when you don't know or see how it's made. Politics is the same way. To some people, it's very, very exciting and interesting. To most people, it's very boring. And even people that vote don't care much about politics. Voters genuinely care about issues, and they don't care about the inner politics. What bothers me about this is people are getting a look at this audit publicly. It's being talked about on every news platform that's available out there. And more people are looking at what this is becoming. Then you look at the party elections and what happened there and what seems to be a very big double standard. You're demanding transparency. You're demanding the ballot machines. By the way, pretty much the same machines that were used in Maricopa County were used in this. It came from another county, but machines were used that were used in the elections as well, that were used to count votes. So when you look at the double standard, it appears we're demanding you give us the machines. We're demanding you give us the software. We're demanding you give us the ballots. We're demanding you give us routers. We're demanding that you let us look in any way, shape, manner, or form we want to look for, whether it's bamboo in the paper or it's all the other things we want to look for, watermarks and all these other things. We're going to look because it's out there. But when it comes to your ballots in your specific election, you get the opportunity to say no. And then when you do say yes, you think it's okay to limit everybody else in what they can look at. That's the appearance. That's the way it looks to the average voter. In less than 2 years, there are six major elections, and I've gone over them almost every day. There are six major statewide elections in just a couple of years. The governor's office, the secretary of state's office, the superintendent of public school, the state treasurer, and the attorney general. And then the sixth one is for the United States Senate seat of Mark Kelly. Those six statewide races are going to direct the course of this state for at least the next 4 years. And with Mark Kelly's seat, 6 years in the Senate. What kind of a shift would happen there? The Republicans are fighting an uphill battle to begin with as a party. And now we're doing this. And I believe all of this will be used against the party. And all of this will be used, unfortunately, against every Republican candidate moving forward. Especially in this next election cycle. They're all going to be questioned on the party elections. They're all going to be questioned on the audit. It's going to be the bone of contention. And then what it's going to be designed to do is divide people within the party and how they vote. Because if you are in favor of the audit and there's one of the candidates that says to somebody in the press, we shouldn't have done it that way, then they're out. You're not going to vote for them. And that division is going to be dangerous for them. How do we move forward as a state? And I'm saying this as a Republican voter, not a member of the party. How do we move forward as a Republican party in a state? How do we move forward with candidates when we're consistently looking backwards? We are looking backwards. We are now 5 months into this presidency, or almost 5 months into this presidency, and we're still looking back at the vote. And the question I have, I want the elections to be fair. I want the audit to expose any anomalies and let's fix them. But what are we doing to move forward? We haven't heard anything about moving forward. Coming up in just a moment, vaccines for preteens. We had Will Humble on the show earlier this morning. His comments about, are they safe or not safe? We'll talk about it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. So the big shift today and the big news when it comes to vaccinations is the FDA has authorized the Pfizer vaccine for children 12 to 15 years of age. So we reached out this morning and we talked with Will Humble. Now, Will Humble used to be head of the Arizona Department of Health Services, but he's currently the Arizona Public Health Association director. And so he joined us right out of the gate at 8:15 this morning. And I asked him, you know, what about this? How should parents feel about this? Should they be concerned?
This clinical trial with Pfizer was about 2,000 kids, and it showed that it was 100% effective. Now, obviously, it's probably not 100% effective, but that's what they found in the clinical trial. And importantly, I think one of the most important things for parents is that they didn't identify any harmful side effects other than the usual stuff, sore arm, and that kind of thing.
So Will Humble gave some great advice in saying that parents should go to their pediatrician, that overwhelmingly parents trust their doctors and get out of the politics. He even said, don't take his word for it, nor should you take mine. But Will Humble was being very honest. Don't take my word for it, he said. Go to your pediatrician. Go get the advice of your pediatrician. And he believes that doctors should have these in their freezer so that they can give the doses. We talked to him about people getting this and how the vaccines and people on the fence. And this is his comments about the pediatricians. How do you convince people that are on the fence with this?
That's easy. Your pediatrician. You know, that's the place to go. That's where parents should go with their questions. The pediatrician, the medical home, if they go to a community health center with their kids, that's the place to go. Nurse practitioners, and pediatricians. And that's, I mean, all surveys point in the same direction. That's who parents trust. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to Facebook. Listen to your doctor.
And I think that's sound advice. We talked about herd immunity and getting people vaccinated. And we talked about the need to get younger people. Now, we're not talking children here, 12 to 15 years old, although he did lump them in. We shifted the conversation to that demographic that is most infected, which is the 20 to 44-year-old age group. They are far and away the highest rate of spread is within that age group. But they also don't have close to the highest number of hospitalizations or deaths. But they are the ones that are keeping our numbers up there and up higher. Again, today's numbers very consistent in that regard. The highest number of new cases. There were 683 new cases. Almost half of them at 336 were 20 to 44 years old. Almost half of the new cases recorded overnight were in that one age group. Now, what's going to take them to get it, you know, vaccinated? That's part of the questions we were asking. But he made a statement about herd immunity, because we've heard lately from a lot of experts saying that herd immunity is not going to be possible. So aside from the question about getting your children vaccinated, and I think the politics of this, coupled with the how fast this vaccine was designed, was they came up with this, has got some parents concerned. But they're also the very same parents that get the vaccines for their kids so their shot records are up to date when the kids go to school. So here's what we talked about herd immunity, and this was a fairly interesting statement.
I will be the first person to argue that we should not need to wear masks in public places as soon as we reach herd immunity, and we can get to herd immunity much faster if we can get people in their 20s and 30s vaccinated in the next month.
But part of the issue is, and I fall into this category, not the age group, but the category, when you're fully vaccinated, at what point am I then safe to not wear my mask? Because this whole thing is about, well, you could still get it and you might pass it on to someone else and maybe this is going to happen. The chances of me getting or spreading the vaccine is very remote now because I've been fully vaccinated. They are still saying because a number of people haven't been vaccinated, I need to still wear a mask so that even though I may not get sick, I don't pass it on to someone else that hasn't been vaccinated yet. I got up at 3:30 in the morning and I got up at 2 in the morning to get my two doses of the vaccine. And yet my life hasn't changed one bit. I'm still wearing a mask. I'm still doing the things I've been asked to do. And that was a point I made with Will was, don't you think that some of the younger people in that 20 to 44-year-old age group are saying, why would I get a vaccine when, you know, it's not going to change my life? And he agreed that that's also part of this. But moving forward, and when can this be put behind us, is an important thing. He said this about the date.
We've got to get people in their 20s and 30s vaccinated and then get these middle schoolers in over the course of the summer. And I will be the first person to come on your show and say, look, just get back to normal. Yes, the virus is going to be out there. It's going to be sporadic. But the public health emergency part of it will be over. And I think by 4th of July, I think it's doable.
And so, you know, and we see it coming maybe even sooner than that. And I like the direction that Arizona is going. But this has become such a mixed bag of commentary, you know, from Dr. Fauci and contradicting himself in a 24-hour period. The masks and when they work, they become a political football. You've got people on one side calling you a horrible person if you're not wearing a mask. You've got people on the other side calling you a sheep if you are wearing a mask. And what you end up having is this fight that doesn't have to be. I will tell you that along with any other vaccine that you get, My personal feeling is you've been fully vaccinated. You've done what you've been asked to do. Now you should be able to go out without a mask. Here's where the problem lies. Unless they are going to force you to somehow show your identification and that you've been vaccinated, they can't tell who's lying about being vaccinated or who hasn't. So they want everybody to stay masked up. To me, it's what's slowing down that younger age demographic. And he's, you know, we need to get a lot more people vaccinated per week. There were 11,874 vaccines given yesterday, according to the website. That's a pretty good number, but they want to get much higher than that. And let's hope that they do. We got more shocking stories from the southern border, and this one is going to tug at your heartstrings. Heartbreaking stuff that's happening. We're going to talk about that coming up in a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. The crisis at the border continues. We are still seeing no resolution at the border. The Vice President of the United States was put in charge of this 45 plus days ago, I think it is now, and has yet to say one thing to the American people about it or do one thing about it as far as we know. If you remember COVID-19 and heading up that task force was former Vice President Mike Pence. And they were very active. They were on top of things. And had they not been, they would have been called out for it. The Vice President of the United States said that at some point and sometime in June, she plans on visiting Mexico and Guatemala. The plan from the administration is to ship hundreds of millions of dollars down to Central America, believing if we fix some of their economic problems, there's a lot of people that aren't going to try to come up north, come this way. There's a lot of things that can be done with American laws that could fix part of the border problem and fix it very quickly. No one's perfect. You know, we keep looking backward at the Trump administration and what we didn't like. This has been an issue for a long time. And I've been critical of everybody involved because of the human element. The minute you see the human element, if you've got a heart in your body, the politics tend to go away quite a bit. We all are going to have policy differences on what the right thing to do is. But it hasn't, the border issue has not been fixed. Go all the way back to Ronald Reagan and it hasn't been fixed. And what we've done is created a generation of second class citizens we call the Dreamers. We've created an underclass, which we know in America is illegal. It's against who we are. And what we are watching happen right now by the thousands is the next generation of Dreamers. Period. That's what's happening. We just heard the story. Well, there's been the stories of the two children that were dropped over the wall by themselves. And if it hadn't been for a camera being used by ICE or Border Patrol, but border observers in the middle of the night using, you know, the light night vision cameras, we would have never known that they were there. They might have spent the night by themselves until someone found them. There were a couple of young boys that were found on separate occasions that had been abandoned by the people that were leading them. And now a farmer in Texas finds five young girls, little girls, one of them without any clothes, wandering around, scared, hungry, tired, cold, probably. And this is something that's a reality of what's happening at the border. The spotlight of the border in the previous administration and facilities and how people were being treated and children torn from their parents. There was a little bit of a misconception, but I don't have to defend, nor do I want to defend the previous administration. Donald Trump has not been the president for almost 5 months. This border situation got worse immediately under the Biden administration and its policies. So when you have a bad policy and everybody makes mistakes, everybody has a redo, everybody says I should have done things differently, and there's nothing wrong with it. But the longer you go without a policy shift, the longer you go without an acknowledgement of this crisis, the longer you go, it's hurting more and more people from both sides of the border. As I told you, a Texas farmer found these girls. Now, I've chronicled and talked to you about the ranchers I've met in southern Arizona and what they can tell you in the stories of what they find every year, rendering first aid and then calling authorities, but keeping people alive that are almost dehydrated to the point of death because of the hot crossing in Arizona. This is a dismal way. This is a horrible way for people to die. It's a horrible thing for people to endure that are coming here, most of which, according to the administration, most of the people in this administration, they're saying they're not letting them stay. So most people are paying all of this money and traversing all of those miles for nothing. And we're doing nothing to stop them from coming. We're doing nothing to take the incentive away from them coming to this country. And they're shipping their children. You know, what are we as a nation? You tell me what we are going to do with all of these children. And that it's the best thing for them to come the way they're coming. The political argument is getting old and tired. It is obvious to the American people that this is horrible for these kids. It's horrible for their parents. The only people benefiting from what's going on right now are the cartels. They are the only groups of people that are benefiting from any of this. And we continue to allow it to happen over and over and over again. And the drugs continue to flow because leaders on the federal border or law enforcement on the borders are forced to take care of what's happening with these unaccompanied minors, with the adults that are being processed through. Now, we were reassured by Senator Sinema that they are working on getting more agents down on the border, more bodies down there to enforce laws, but also more judges to adjudicate cases. Because that's the other knock on this, is the judicial system is as overwhelmed as these facilities are. And at some point, all of us have got to take this and say, we've got to point the finger. And the finger's got to be pointed at the people that are accountable. And the people of this administration, from the president down, are accountable for what's happening. The policy is flawed. And if they were really, really concerned about this, and it was Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, that said that it's an important issue, but it's not the biggest one to the American people. That's why the president hasn't gone down to the border. And I will tell you that from Texas to California, the border states are very concerned about this because now it's hurting the communities around them. Without the COVID testing, without the COVID shots, without the necessary distancing, without all the things that this White House says are necessary, they are creating super spreader events and then on a daily basis loading people up on buses or airplanes and sending them to various places, including Phoenix, Arizona, across the country. And at what point do we push back and say the hypocrisy of what you're saying is acceptable for American businesses and what you're now saying is acceptable in these facilities as far as COVID-19 precautions exposes the nonsense, number one. But number two, what are you doing to lessen the burden? And the answer is they're doing nothing. The president of the United States talked about creating a border surge. And that's exactly what's happened with bad policy. And I don't understand why somebody on the other side of the aisle, and I had a little conversation with somebody on Twitter, was talking about Trump. Well, let's give him every benefit of the doubt. Let's say that there is no change in the people that are watching these kids from Trump administration to Biden administration. If it was broken when Trump was doing it, why doesn't the current administration fix it? That's the bigger question. Dropping the partisan politics all the time for a solution is what matters. And until we get groups of people on either side willing to talk about a solution, we're going to continue to argue about these nonsense things. So we're going to talk about people not going back to work. Is there a reason people aren't? And does it have anything to do with unemployment benefits? We'll talk about that coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. How much truth is it to the statement that people are not going back to work because some of them are able to stay home and make more money or as much money on unemployment? Is the fact that we have unemployment benefits that are so high because of COVID-19 hindering people from going back into the workplace? I would say absolutely. There's some truth to that with some people, that they are, especially in the service industry, where things have been so limited. Here in Arizona, we've loosened things up, but in other places where they haven't. We are not Texas or Florida that's opened up completely, but there are still some hindrances in the service industry. And for those of you that have never worked in it, I will tell you, I loved it. When I was a kid, I worked in restaurants and in a bar. And I absolutely loved the work. And I mean this sincerely. This job that I'm doing now, I've loved more than anything else. But second to that was working in a restaurant situation, a service industry situation. And I'll tell you why, because you never knew who you were going to meet. You didn't know if they were going to like you, if they were going to be in a good mood or in a bad mood. Even when people didn't like me, I always kind of thought it was fun and I laughed. You never know what the experience is going to be. It changes from day to day, and you get to have great conversations, and a lot like this job, great conversations with people that you've never met before and you may never see again. And sometimes people come back on a regular basis, but I love the industry. But the key to making money for them is turning tables and the ability for people, not just the restaurant owner, but the people that work there, because they're working for tips, to turn tables. You look at a bartender situation right now and what they're going through. When you had bars that were at 50% capacity and you had to have a 6-foot distance for anybody sitting at the bar, you've just taken a bartender's ability to make money and cut it in half. So you do have people working twice as hard for half as much, literally. Your COVID protocols, the sanitation protocols, the mask wearing, everything else, not to mention now you're limited. When you seat people at a bar, you know what that looks like. So you not only have the business of the people sitting at your bar, but you've got the business of the people that are walking up and jumping between the bar stools, which everybody realizes you slide to the side to let somebody in a busy place grab a drink. And so that's a part of how they make their living. They make a huge part of their money in tips. And when we've limited the way we have, the service industry has gotten hammered. So for a lot of people that aren't working, they're making unemployment money. And for the people that were back to work, now it's getting better, but the people that were going back to work were seeing such a drop in their income because of the drop of the patrons that were allowed to be where they worked. So that alone will tell you, yes, there are people out there saying, I'll go back to work when things are back to full capacity because I can't make the kind of money I was before. We also can't leave out the fact that there are parents that are stuck at home because their kids can't go to school. Maybe not in Arizona everywhere. There are still some places, but in the other states where they're fighting schools opening. This is a big issue. Yes, it's political. I believe in my heart that it's definitely political. It is without a doubt politics. And there's no doubt that the teachers' unions are knee deep in it. But aside from the politics, American families know a couple of things. They don't care Republican, Democrat. They don't care about your politics with unions. They don't care about any of that. Their kids are not in school. Why? It's not important. Their kids aren't. So one of the parents is staying home. And if you're home and not working, you're collecting unemployment. And until your child is able to be in the classroom where they're safe and you can't leave them home all day long, you're going to be stuck at home. So there are things that need to change. So yes, I think we need to do what Arizona did and say, in order to collect unemployment, you have to show that you're looking for work and you haven't found work. I think that's a great way to get people back into the workforce. But we also have to have the option available for working parents that's better than what's out there. And that, I think, is a big issue as well. And the sooner we start opening those doors and allowing kids back into school, you're going to see some of those parents go back to work. As soon as we start seeing restaurants at full capacity, you're going to start, then we'll see people back to work. I feel for anybody. When you're a bartender or you're a waiter or a waitress, there are people that treat you like dirt. There's no doubt about that. It happens sometimes. You're looked at as a servant. Now, you are a server, but you're not a servant. But there are people that will treat you that way. But any good business owner, any good restaurant manager, any good restaurant owner that knows their business well understands that those people are ambassadors to your business. The quality of the food comes out of the kitchen, obviously, the quality of the drinks by the bartender, but a lot of the experience has to do with the way the people that serve you treat you. And they will come back to your place a lot of times specifically for how well they're treated. I will tell you, I hate bad service. Hate it because I was in that industry. I hate slow service. I hate bad service, but I really do appreciate it when it's very good. And I think anyone who owns a business understands that, and they're valued employees. So we've got to do something to get those hardworking people back to making the money that they're able to make with full places. Now, everyone says, well, safety first. I agree, safety first. But we are at a place right now where we are doing so much better. It's time to allow these working class people the ability to make all the money possible. If you don't feel comfortable at a crowded bar, I absolutely respect you. 100% respect that position. But then don't sit at the bar. Again, it's an easy principle. Don't sit there. Go sit somewhere else. Order takeout. But for the people that have been fully vaccinated like I have, for the bar staff that wants to be able to, a restaurant staff that wants to be able to make money again, we have to be able to give them an opportunity to do that. You want to end what's happening right now? This is how we have to do it. But there is truth in saying there are industries out there that are suffering because people don't want to come back to work yet. And they're not. There is work available. But people just aren't going. So, yes, things have got to change. Just after 11 o'clock, we talk about an Arizona lawmaker who is embarrassed by the audit. And it's a Republican. So that's coming up. We do. Did you hear this at 11:20? If you're new to the show, thanks for listening. But at 11:20 every day, we give you an opportunity to get caught up on the biggest headlines. So in one segment of the show, all the biggest newsmakers, you get to hear what they said. So you're fully caught up on the show. That coupled with talking about a Republican that's embarrassed by what's happening. It should be an interesting final hour of the show. I hope you're able to stick around for it because we're going to do it here just coming up in a few moments. And as always, we're going to end the show on a bang, so stick around.